John right behind you. He's coming up too. I was introducing him to John.
It works.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. If you need to find a seat, or if we need seats, we have our fire chief delivering seats right now, it looks like. Always serving. We appreciate him doing that. We also, if anybody else needs seats, just raise your hand. We've got a group of folks that can help get seats out for you. All right, everybody, we're going to get started. So first off, I just want to thank everybody for coming out this evening. We are really excited to have this and have all of the candidates here with us tonight. So let's give them a big round of applause for coming out and doing this. As chairman of the South County Chambers of Commerce, and if you haven't heard, we did change our name, so welcome. And we also want to thank all of our members of our Chamber of Commerce, and we also want to thank our chairman's circle for always being there for us so that we can have these kind of events for our community. We also like to thank AGP. There's a gentleman over there that are filming this, and that way there will be a recording of this event, and it will be hosted on Slow Span, so anybody that did not able to be attending could actually see it there. We want to thank the League of Women Voters for their assistance, and if you have any questions, visit their table. It's in the back, and they always have a thing there. If you haven't registered to vote, it's time to get registered. We also want to thank our treasurer, Wendell. He is going to be our timekeeper, so if you see a red sign from Wendell, that means it's over, and we're going to be moving on and having fun. We also want to just thank all of you here in the community, because without you, our businesses are not successful, and we're not successful as a chamber, so give yourselves a big round of applause for coming out this evening. We have Mike Morrison. Mike is right coming up the side. He's our past chairperson, and he is actually going to do the Pledge of Allegiance. If we could all rise, please.
Please place your right hand over your heart and begin. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
I'm going to do something that wasn't on the script and a little bit out of norm, but this is a special week for America. A lot of things happened in our past. If we could just take a moment of silence to remember 9/11 and those that sacrificed and gave all for our country. Thank you. At this time, we want to thank Tony Goetz. He has the Casitas of Aurora Grande. He's one of our chairpersons for the political committee that we have for each one of our cities. He is the co-chair of our governmental affairs committee and also a board member. And he's going to be our MC tonight. And he's going to go through and explain how all this is going to work and the time. And everybody's going to get their chance to have their 2 minutes and a lot of exciting things. So buckle in and be ready for some fun. Thank you all again for coming this evening. Tony.
Hi, everybody. We'd like to once again thank all the candidates for participating tonight. And before we begin, we think it's important that we are going to just touch on the Code of Civility Pledge, which all seven mayors in Slo County have signed, along with the chair of the Board of Supervisors. The document was provided to all the candidates this evening prior to this for their review. And I'm not going to read the entire pledge, but just the bullet points, which are pretty self-explanatory, that everyone pledges to listen first, respect differing opinions, be courteous, disagree constructively, and debate the policy and not the person. In the basket here, we've collected questions from the audience. And if you did not get your question in, please see the note cards in the back, and they'll bring them up over here. And what we're going to do, we're going to begin with each candidate taking 2 minutes to introduce themselves and talk about what is important to them. And then each candidate's going to have 1 minute to answer the questions that are provided, you know, from the audience. We're going to rotate who answers first. And then we're going to finish at 7. Then each candidate will have 1 minute for final remarks. And then afterwards, some of the candidates are going to remain at the tables, and they can answer questions personally if you have any of them. So we're going to start tonight with Mayor Hill in 2 minutes.
Good evening. Thank you all for coming and taking the time out of your evening to be here. I'm so proud of Arroyo Grande and the civic responsibility that I see here and the spirit of volunteerism in the community. It's what makes Arroyo Grande the special place that it is. Since you wrote me in as your mayor in 2014 and I was reelected again in 2 years ago, again with the endorsement of the Police Officers Association, which I'm again very honored to have this evening and in this election, we've done a lot for the city, and the city's made some good progress. I'm also proud to be a signer of the Civility Pledge and to have earned the reputation of being a listener and for being respectful of all the voices in the community, something I take very seriously. The city now is in good shape. We're stable. We have a new city manager. We have a very dedicated staff. Our city manager is quite dedicated, and they're concerned about the well-being of the city. Many of our city employees actually volunteer in city functions, such as park and rec events, and we're very fortunate to have that, as well as the service clubs and the other volunteers that we have. As the mayor, I also serve as the sanitation district representative for the city, and we've been through quite a bit there. We managed to stop litigation against the state water board that was costing over $1 million to the residents of the sanitation district. The former administrator there, after I instigated an investigation of some apparent corruption there, that was investigated further by the district attorney, and we've made a lot of progress there. So I appreciate your being here, and thank you.
Before we go to Council Member Ray, can everyone please take a moment and make sure your phones are on vibrate? Council Member Ray.
You ready, Wendell? All right, great. Hello, everyone. I'm Karen Ray. I'm your mayor pro tem and council member. And, you know, I'd like to just sort of pick up where the mayor left off in saying that the city really is stable. So the question is, how do we move forward? And I'm running for mayor because I have a vision for our community. I've grown up here, and my values are Arroyo Grande values through and through. And for the past 4 years, we really haven't had a vision going forward. We've been fixing some problems of the past. And I want to get this community moving forward again. We need to work collaboratively with our general partners to move towards a recycled water project. We need to work on a comprehensive and affordable plan for our recreation department that meets our community's expectations. We need to envision how we can creatively and actively address the need for affordable housing rather than just reacting to projects as they come in here and there. We need to partner with the community to envision how to improve Grand Avenue section by section and bring in new economic projects that fit within our community's character. So come with me forward into the future. I'd like to see our public art program expand and receive regular funding that could possibly come from new development. I'd like to see our historic district be enhanced by adding informational and directional signage to make a walking history tour interactive and self-guiding. I'd like to work on enhancing our public areas citywide so our history and character are visible everywhere, not just in our village core. I'd like to see more protected bike lanes and better sidewalks that encourage community interaction. I want our community's character and values to be seen in every neighborhood, every park, and every public space. And it's because of my positive, can-do nature and my ability to look toward the possibilities and my extensive and proven leadership to this community that I've earned the endorsements of trusted leaders from all walks and all parties, including Cacho Ashajian, John Scholes, Shelley Higginbotham, Nan Fowler, Trudy Jarrett, Nick and Kathy Tompkins, Linda Austin, Greg Cottrell, Frank Shiro, Dave Ross, and many, many more. I invite you to KarenRay.com to see the latest list. So for all those reasons, I ask you to join me for a brighter future for Arroyo Grande. Divided, we will continue to struggle. But together, we are extraordinary. Thank you.
Ms. Payne.
Sorry. My name is Terry Fowler Payne. I'm historic here, third generation. I've raised 4 daughters here, and I now have 6 grandchildren here. So my interest in investing in this community is very strong. I'd like to see more affordable housing and not low-cost housing. There's a need to have self-pride and be intermixed with all the residents, not just combined in one area where you're not really getting self-esteem and self-respect. So the other thing is I have been on Planning Commission for 4 years, so I've seen a lot that's gone on, not only in the Planning Commission and City Council, but with the community. I have a strong desire to keep the community and not just keep it from growing, but to grow in a normal, respectful pattern. So I don't know where my time is because he's not holding anything up yet, but I'm okay. So, I just have a real strong desire to keep our community the way it is and still grow with respect to our historic values and see our Grand Avenue enhancement come to fruition. We've been working on that with design guidelines. And so my main concern right now is for an affordable housing 10% to be initiated on subdivisions and not just the fee per unit. I did some calculations and found that the amount of the fee that they're being charged for a larger subdivision isn't even enough to build one affordable house. So I have worked on large subdivisions in the past where we were required to initiate 10%. So if you had 50 units, you had to provide 5 units at the cost of construction, which integrates people with the other community members. And I think my time is up.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Ms. Kubel.
Hi, I'm Colleen Kubel, your candidate for Ward Grande City Council. My name is third on the ballot. Oops, I'm sorry.
Forgot to do that first. Okay, let me start again. Hi, I'm Colleen Kubel, your candidate for Arroyo Grande City Council. My name is third on the ballot. I am endorsed by the Police Officers Association. I was raised in the South County, met my husband at Arroyo Grande High School, and raised my family here, two children, six grandkids, and one great-grandchild. I have always had a strong sense of community, having served as a volunteer for my church, Five Cities Youth Football in the city, currently serving on the Architectural Review Committee. I have worked in both the public and private sectors for the Arroyo Grande, Cal Poly, Santa Maria Police Departments, and the San Luis Obispo County Sheriff's Department as a dispatcher and crime analyst. I have worked in the Transportation Division of Lucia Mar Unified School District and as the Daily Operations Supervisor for South County Area Transit. I am also a licensed general contractor. I do not have a degree behind my name like everyone up here on this panel does, I am sure, and I am sure that I do not have as much money as they do to run the campaign either. But I do have many titles, such as problem solver, good listener, dedication to helping others my whole life, honest, diligent in finishing any task that I take on, realtor, 911 dispatcher, crime analyst, fireman's wife, mother, daughter, sister, volunteer, and the list goes on. I have accomplished more in my lifetime through everyday experiences than any degree could have possibly afforded me. I have more problem-solving experience in my 40 years in the workforce than most of the candidates running for City Council. There are many opportunities for us as a team to find solutions to our budget concerns and the rise of the cost of living. We face a dilemma of bringing our police department up to full staff and restructuring our fire authority, both priorities, so that we protect our citizens to the best of our ability and still manage to stay within our budget. Other concerns are traffic congestion, water conservation, and recruiting businesses from all over the area to come to our city to start up their business, just to name a few. Thank you very much, and I would appreciate it if you would stand with me. I can be your voice on the City Council. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Mack.
Good evening. I'm John Mack. Tell you a little bit about myself. I'm an architect and a Cal Poly graduate. I'm also a contractor. And I specialize in industrial and commercial projects, as well as single-family custom homes. I'm currently on the Planning Commission and been serving almost 4 years now as your Planning Commissioner. As a long-term resident of Arroyo Grande, I fathered four children, all graduates of Arroyo Grande High School, one of whom I'm really proud of. I only have time to talk about one of them. She served 8 years in the military, 4 years in Iraq, and a couple years in South Korea, and a couple years in Kuwait. And she's now on Border Patrol defending our borders. I'm also a supporter of the ROP program at the Arroyo Grande High School and volunteer my time. And I'm a strong supporter of the Arroyo Grande High School and mentor many of the members in Randy Fizer's class. I also volunteer in community projects. I'd like to share a bandstand in Napomo Park, Coastal Christian School. Even though they're not in our city, many of our residents do attend that school. In terms of what I support, I believe in full representation of all Arroyo Grande citizens, regardless of where you live in the city. I think we need even representation throughout the city. Rural heritage and unique village character that separates us from the surrounding cities. Bar none, we have a charm and a character unequal. Other cities can't match the charm that we have to deliver. That's why people come here to the village. Providing our emergency responders with the staffing and tools they need, even if it's, updating materials and programs or whatever they need, we need to provide what they need. They provide a valuable service to us. We need to stand behind them. I'm also for policies that force us to be fiscally responsible. We need to balance the budget. I'm also for boosting tax revenue through commercial industrial growth and welcome new businesses to the community and existing businesses to grow. Looks like my time is almost up here. I'm also for workforce housing. I believe we need to have housing for the people who work here and affordable housing and keep that affordable throughout time.
Thank you, Mr. Mack.
Thank you.
Time's up. Mr. Paulding.
Hello, everyone. I'm Jimmy Paulding, and I'm running for Arroyo Grande City Council. It's so nice to see so many familiar faces. Thank you all for coming out tonight. A little bit about myself. I'm an AG native, like many sitting here today. Went to AG High and also graduated from Cal Poly. At Cal Poly, I studied city and regional planning and actually interned with our very own planning department while at Cal Poly. For the last 11 years, I've been working in the private sector, although all the projects I've worked on have been public agency projects. So I've worked on everything from building, planning and building wastewater treatment plants to county airports, county jails. And in my experience, I've been able to really understand how county government and city governments operate. I think that's an important skill set that that we need on our city council. I also went to law school, commuted down to Santa Barbara, and took and passed the bar in February of last year, so I'm now a California licensed attorney. And what we need is city council members that can bring the technical skill sets we need to the technical issues that we face. When you look at everything from water to traffic, even to housing or our public safety needs, we need folks that have an ability to truly analyze all the information available, hear from the community, and listen with a willingness to hear all sides, to build consensus, and in some cases reach compromise so we can actually get things done. And so as a project manager, I bring that commitment and skill set to our community. We need to protect and preserve our quality of life. That's the reason that we're all here tonight, because this place is unmatched in terms of places to live in the world. And Arroyo Grande is unique. We have this small town character, charm, and sense of place that we need to ensure is preserved. And so I will be an advocate for everybody in our community, work towards building consensus on our local issues, and ensure that that we're able to really create movement on many of our challenging problems. So I'd appreciate your support very much. I ask for your vote. Thank you.
Mr. Storton.
Thank you. Thank you, everyone, for coming tonight. It's great to be here and see such an overwhelming presence of people who support our community. My name's Keith Storton. I am running for city council. And when I approached people and said, I'm going to run for council, they said, oh, you're going to be a politician. And they said it in a really negative way. It wasn't a good term. And so I actually looked up the word politician, and it means one engaged in conducting the business of government. And I thought, you know, how simple is that? But there's always another definition. And right below that, it was a person interested in political office for selfish, usually short-sighted reasons. And I thought to myself, wow, look, that's where we've gotten to where we are so polarized in our politics, and it gets to be vicious, and sometimes it just is unproductive. People have told me, why would you do this to yourself? I love this community, and I've grown up here, lived here most of my life, graduated, raised my kids here. And really, for me, it's all about localism. It's about bringing our community together where you can go out and see, touch, and feel, and see the things that are going on in our government, where you can see somebody working in the streets and you know the work's getting done. And you can see your government at work. You can invite your council member to go have a cup of coffee. You can show up at a meeting and express your opinion. This is really where it matters. My mantra for my campaign is community counts, and it's the last six letters in community, which is unity, which means we do need to come together and solve our problems together, not in a divisive way. I plan to do this with three words. One is civility. We need to approach each other with respect as we have our discussions. The other is teamwork. If we have civility and we have teamwork, we can come together and solve problems and work through issues. And if we have civility, teamwork, we've built trust. And if we have trust with one another, that takes us through today and tomorrow as well. I don't have a personal agenda to be on council. I'm not politically tied to anything or anyone. I'm simply drawn to serve this community. So I'm looking forward to addressing our concerning issues tonight and setting a stage for constructive problem solving. Thank you.
Thank you, candidates. So what we're going to do now is, as we go, we're going to start with Mayor Hill first, and everyone's going to answer the question. And then when we get to the second question, we're going to start with Councilmember Ray and so forth. So this is the fun part. I picked the first question, and then after that, I'm going to have someone from the audience just pick out the other one. So they're going to be very random. Okay, so Mayor Hill, the first question is, you want to grow to generate income for the city, but if we don't have resources to support growth, i.e. water, police, fire, operational hours for them, how can the city expect to continue operating or its citizens to pay for the city's bad decisions? So everyone gets to answer this, though. So. And if you want me to repeat it, I'm happy to. So I'm getting yes. Okay.
Karen's asked to please repeat it.
Okay.
In 1 minute.
You want growth to generate income for the city, but if we don't have resources to support growth, i.e. water, police, fire, operational hours, how can the city expect to continue operating or its citizens pay for the city's bad decisions?
Okay, thank you. That's correct. The residential, actually all the property taxes together in the city of Aurora Grande don't even cover the police department, much less any other city services. So what we need to do is attract businesses and be more supportive of business development. We have lots of undeveloped and underdeveloped parcels on Grand Avenue and others that should be developed for commercial purposes to bring in sales tax revenue that is what actually keeps our city afloat and keeps us from having to go to you, the voters, and ask for bond measures and other money to keep the city moving. So one of the most essential things that we can do is support our businesses here and support commercial development.
Thank you.
Okay, I think I got this one. It was three parts, and the first part was asking about growth to generate income, and the person who wrote the question didn't really talk about which kind of growth, and there's so many different kinds of growth that we could be talking about. We can be talking about residential, and within that we can be talking about high-end homes or affordable housing or workforce housing. We could be talking about commercial development, and the upshot of me saying all of that isn't to say the person was confused. The upshot is saying it's a very complex problem, and really, people have we have to have growth in some fashion because people have an expectation to be able to do with their properties what they're legally allowed to do. So the job of this group and your elected representatives is to really find the balance between what our code asks for, what people can reasonably expect to do, and at the same time what we can provide and ask of them. Additionally, if we're really going to kind of drill down to commercial development, there's been a lot in the news lately and in our planning commission lately about retail versus non-retail or services. And I think what we also need to do is recognize that we need a balance between our services, which bring repeat business towards our retail. So all those things go hand in hand, our housing, our economic development, and commercial, so that we can bring in the income to provide the services that our city needs.
Thank you. Ms. Payne.
Off and on. Controlled growth is one thing that I've really been interested in. Having lived here my whole life, been raised and be a third generation, my concern was that we've spent a lot of money that we didn't have. And until we can curb that and get our city back in line with where we should be. I was kind of raised where if you don't have the money in your pocket, you don't buy the bicycle. So the out-of-town growth, I'm not 100% in favor of, because we've always been a support your local merchant. We don't want large chains. We don't want people coming in and building, and I call them hit and run. They do a large development, and then they're out of here. I think we have enough contractors here that could do the job for us, and I'd just like to see our city maintained the way it has been in the last 100 years. Like I said, I'm third generation. My father was a developer. My grandfather was a masonry contractor. You can see his pictures in some of the shops in the village. So I do have a strong vesting interest in how that growth is handled, and I'd like to see more of it stay within our community. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Kugel?
Thank you very much. The way for the city of Rio Grande to increase our income is, first of all, to recruit the tax-based businesses that are desperately needed in the corridor along 101 from Oak Park Boulevard down to Tropic Way and actually down further to Cherry Lane. There are so many different developments that could be established there and turned into income that would help the city with its income. And then to streamline, which has already started, each department of the city. No more layoffs, though. We have really, really good employees in the city, and I don't think it's fair to have them pay for what has happened with the budget in the city. So I would be in favor of going recruiting out of the area, bringing businesses in that will bring our income up. Thank you.
Mr. Mack. Thank you.
Yes. Well, what I've been witnessing over the past few years is a disproportional amount of residential growth to commercial growth. What we really need to do is concentrate and bring in businesses and growing our existing businesses and providing areas for our existing businesses to grow. We don't have big enough buildings for small businesses to grow into because we don't have the large commercial areas or the large industrial areas for our small businesses to grow. They're moving out of the area. So my idea is to bring more stimulus to our tax-paying or tax-occurring businesses and industrial entities and bring in other new businesses. Right now, we're filling our commercial area with residential development, which is increasing needs on our public services and emergency responders and water, where we can do redevelopment in the existing commercial cores. And like the existing Kmart, putting in some vibrant businesses in there that are going to be even higher tax-generating venue for us before we grow residentially.
Thank you. Mr. Paulding.
Yeah, so I'm going to answer the question the other way around. I think the question was, we have limitations, traffic limitations, water resource limitations, police and fire. We only have so many police officers. We only have so many firefighters. So how can we continue to approve more residential development when it's going to be a burden to those services? Well, first of all, I say with regard to water and traffic, let's push those projects forward. Let's improve our roads and infrastructure. Let's elect advocates that are going to sit on the city council and push for those regional improvements so we actually have a solution, for example, to our water problem. We'll talk, I'm sure, about water, the recycled water project known as Central Coast Blue later today. But it is true that our businesses, our local businesses, have to succeed if we want to be in a good fiscal position as a city. Right now, as was mentioned earlier, for property taxes, half of it goes to the school district. 22% around that goes to the county. 17% comes back to the city. And then sales tax, most of it goes to the state general fund, then to the county, then back to our city. In order to become fiscally or continue to maintain a positive fiscal position, we have to somehow attract those businesses and focus on economic development so we get that sales tax and property tax revenue. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Storton.
Thank you. I've worked 27 years in the public sector, retired as a captain with the San Luis Police Department, and that's a role that was right below the chief of police, and was involved a lot in budget decisions and working with issues of staff reductions and just resources dwindling over the years, particularly the last 10 years. So we have about an $18 million general fund, and $11.5 million of that is strictly salaries and benefits. Our city services are service-oriented. It's people-powered positions. We don't make or sell widgets or make a profit. So what we need to concentrate is that economic growth that will help us survive and make the funds that we need. It's certainly to attract businesses that are producing tax revenue for our city. It's building in partnerships like Central Coast Blue or through our fire authority with other communities. It's looking for grants, either state or federal grants. It's about outsourcing opportunities and even looking at ways at where we're efficient or inefficient in services in order to best use the funds that we have to continue with the services that we need. And examining what kind of businesses that can come in, like a hotel with TOT tax, and paying down our PERS obligations.
Okay, thank you. Okay, so now we're going to start with Councilmember Ray on the second question. And this is, why did City Council / staff get raises when we pay so much in salaries / benefits? Why not hire locally and provide other perks such as city car use instead of an allowance, etc.?
Okay. I think there's some errors in the question, so I'm going to start with that.
And I'm happy to repeat it again.
Sure. Go ahead. That way everybody else gets a chance to think, too.
Why did City Council / staff get raises when we pay so much in salaries and benefits? Why not hire locally and provide other perks, such as a city car use, instead of a car allowance, et cetera?
I think what the heart of that question is going back to what one of the city council member candidates said, which is, you know, so much of our general fund monies go to the cost of personnel. And that really is, obviously, if we want to make a dent in our expenditures, then that's a place where you could naturally look to. So I'm guessing that that's the heart of the question that the person asked. However, city council has not had a raise. It's the same $400 it's been for a really, really long time. I don't think it comes out to minimum wage by the time we're done with that, but we're all happy to serve. And we have done moderate raises now that we're outside of the Great Recession. And I have to commend our staff who willingly, our bargaining units willingly put off raises, in fact, gave up contractually obligated raises during that time for the good of our city. So I think that I would characterize that differently, that the city has really worked together, the city and its staff, to keep those costs as low as possible and even, again, voluntarily giving them up when times were bad so that, you know, we're doing a little bit of catch-up now to get people back up to speed. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Payne.
Well, it was my understanding that, you know, in last month we laid off 10 people, three of which I know for sure was not happy about it and had to take the buyout program. At the same time, we were giving pay increases, and I think that's out of line. I think there was other places that we could have shortened our budget so we didn't have to lay off those 10 people. It's a hard time to find another job. They've been dedicated. Some of them had been there for several 20 years or more. So I think that was, in my opinion, that was a wrong move to take. Staff pay increases, at this point, I know, and I'm not going to say what they are, but I know that we have some staff that are taking a paycheck home each month that's greater than some of the people in our community are getting on for a year on Social Security. So we need to do something about that. That's just kind of gotten out of control. And my time's now up. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Kugel?
The question, I think, was why did the city staff get slapped? Nope, I did it again. Thinking about the question, not the microphone. Why did the city / the staff and city council get raises? That is the question that many people in this audience are asking, too. And I think that I'm going to answer it a little different way. I believe that the city council could give up their benefits and could have paid for all of those staff that were laid off just by the cost of those benefits not being paid to them. Most of them have other sources of income. And so, in my opinion, that would have been a much better way to handle it, and we would still have our city staff. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Mack.
I kind of heard two questions in there. And the first is if we're having financial times, I don't think we should be looking at ourselves as giving ourselves raises in a time of financial crisis. We should not be laying off qualified individuals who've been with the city for years. I do echo some of the employees that were laid off that wanted to stay. They could have been probably offered to stay on, probably equal and take less hours, equal to the benefits that they're going to receive when they're forced to retire or leave. The other question I believe was in there is something to do with automobile expenses and probably getting reimbursed for mileage. I'm not sure. Get a city car. I'm not necessarily sure that is a more affordable thing than to reimburse for expenses when you include insurances and those sorts of things for city employees to drive a company car. But I would be definitely against voting ourselves raises in a time of crisis.
Thank you. Mr. Paulding.
I certainly am not running for city council to make money, that's for sure. This is all about serving the community, and I think that's why we're all here. And I think everybody here has their heart in the right place, and it's something that I value. And when it comes to how we treat city staff, I think obviously the obvious approach is to, for those that are thinking about retiring, that if they retire early, that's one of the best ways to cut those positions, and then you just don't rehire. The city's done a good job, in my opinion, of identifying those services that are core and essential. For example, public safety, where if you're losing a policeman or a firefighter, you're definitely going to want to replace that position because we don't want any service level to decline with regard to our public safety needs. So I would say that as a council member, I would review how we look at our city services and cutbacks based on the model of identifying first those core and essential services.
Thank you. Mr. Storton?
I would first have to agree that we do have issues with negotiations and things where we're looking at trying to determine compensation for our city employees. City service is exactly that. It's people doing the work, and we have to hire good people, and we have to be competitive when we hire good people, but we have to be conscientious of the wages that we pay them. But on the back end of hiring bad people, we expose ourselves to even costs that are unintended or unexpected with things like workers' comp liability, with things like lawsuits, and inefficient work performed by people who aren't doing the job that they're supposed to be doing. So I think we really need to take a step back and realize we are a service people-oriented business running the city, and all those people are out there doing the work, and we want to make sure that they're qualified and not costing us a lot of money on the back end, which does happen frequently with things like lawsuits, workers' comp, and other situations like that.
Thank you. Okay, here's our third question, and Ms. Pick. Oh, I'm sorry.
The mayor.
Excuse me, my bad. Excuse me, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. The city council, of course, has not had a raise. I also don't take any health insurance from the city, which some council members do, and that costs quite a bit of money. So I would advocate not. I think it's council members who are trying to hold a budget, it's setting the example is something that we all should be looking at. City employees have received raises in line with inflation. This idea that we could give cars or something like that, I think one of the other candidates mentioned that is probably not cost effective due to insurance liability and other things. But there's a couple of things. The PERS system that this city has no control over and still has to pay for at the state level, and the reorganization of the fire authority is necessary, in my view, to continue our services in an affordable manner.
Thank you. My apologies again, Mr. Mayor. Okay, so Ms. Payne, you're in the batter's box on this one. Okay, our city is in crisis, reduced city hall hours, severe drought, understaffed police department and fire department that we can't afford. Yet you continue to allow building of new homes. How are you going to resolve these issues?
Well, just for clarification, the two subdivisions that have recently gone in, I voted no on a planning commission. That's nothing that I shouldn't divulge because it was on public information. I just, again, I think we've tried to outgrow our area, and I think the majority of the people probably here came to this, if they aren't from here, they came to this area because they like that small community. So having growth large developments, motels and hotels, those are the impacts that's hitting our water right now. I know that if you talk to them, there's a formula that they've used several years ago that said we would have X amount of water for so many years, but we didn't take. I don't think we took into consideration how bad the water was going to get when that projection was made. So I think we need to curb what's going on with these large subdivisions and the new hotels that are going in. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Kubel?
First thing that we need to think about, I did it again.
Every time. The first thing that we need to think about is what do we need to do to stop the bleeding of our budget? And one of the first things we need to do is to hold down those developments until we have utilities that are in place before they even go in. Those have to be paid for first. We can't just keep going with the developments that we have now openly being approved and everything else. We can't sustain them without extra growth with the tax-based businesses or anything else. It's just going to keep bleeding out of the budget. So we need to control that and make sure we have those utilities and water and sewer and every roads and everything else taken care of prior to any development at all in the future. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Mack?
She took my answer. But, yeah, absolutely. You have to provide the infrastructure before you can allow the growth. And, you know, there's a lot of things we're not even tapping in to. You know, government grants for facade renovations, you know, complete streets and doing the street maintenance and some of the things that could be going on in our city. But most importantly, it's the water. What are we doing about the water? We need a water management plan. And one of the things I want to do when I get elected is create a city water management plan on how to manage that resource. And how, you know, when projects come on board, is there the resource even available? And if not, what are we going to do to get that water resource sort for that development can happen? It shouldn't be the burden of the taxpayers and the individuals who live here. It really should be up to the developers and the people proposing the project to also bring a solution when they want to do more growth. Looks like my time is up. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Paulding.
Growth and development, I would say, ranks as one of the top issues here in our community because, as mentioned earlier, I think the reason that most of us are here is because we love this place and we want to preserve what we love about it, and we don't want to see growth and sprawl and a loss of the character and charm that is Arroyo Grande. So every particular project gets reviewed under the California Environmental Quality Act. Its impacts to water, to traffic, to neighborhood character, to air, to noise, all those different things are part of the environmental review process. What's important is that the public is engaged in that process, because if a project doesn't fit, isn't well thought out, and is an additional burden or an overburden, for lack of a better term, to our community, it shouldn't be approved. So one of my campaign platform positions is to encourage folks to show up and to figure out ways that the city can create additional avenues for community participation so the voice, the collective voice of the community, is heard.
Thank you. Mr. Storton.
I'd have to compliment Jimmy on that answer with the public engagement part, and it's something I actually made a note to. We have such a diverse feeling as far as our growth and development, and recognize there is a need for it, and we have to address that. Our areas to grow is really limited. Our city does not really have much space to grow on the outside of our borders, short of annexing. So it's really concentrating on that interior format of what can we offer and use for our advantage in order to get the best tax revenue we can, using that space wisely, but recognizing that we don't want to grow to a point where we are sprawling and losing the charm and character of our community. So really it's a matter of making sure that when we are looking at developments, we're looking at those impact fees and making sure that we're getting what we need in order to preserve that long-term use of whether it's our roads, lights, sewers, water, whatever the case may be. And really having the public engage in this and providing us out in council with some thoughts and solutions, because we all are in this shared community together.
Thank you. Mayor Hill.
I think that we're already experiencing growth, kind of like being the frog in the boiling water, and the heat's coming up on us, and the frogs are sitting complacently, waiting for the water to boil, and that refers to the numbers of large residential developments that have been approved without provision for infrastructure, as was mentioned earlier, and an imbalance in the business community and our ability to pay for all of these things that can only come with increased tax revenue through sales taxes generated by businesses and transient occupancy taxes provided by hotel developments. Hotel taxes in large part come to the city. Other taxes, including regular sales taxes, while they are absolutely essential for city services, only the smaller portion of those come to the city. So we need to encourage businesses again and possibly hotel development where that makes sense.
Thank you. Councilmember Ray?
It's nice to go last because I get a sense of how everybody interpreted the question, because the original question was related to reduced hours and reduced fire and police and putting that together with development. And I think that I'm going to take a little bit wider angle lens than everybody else did on this, and that is, this is that vision that I was talking about at the beginning. And the last time we did a big general plan update for this city was in 2000. So it was nearly 20 years ago that we sat down as a city and said, what do we want and where do we want it? It's time for us to do that level of engagement with our general plan again, because we need to sit down as a city, have this conversation. Where are we putting the new hotels? Where are we putting new residential develop? Where are we going to have some larger places where our businesses can expand? And we need to have that visioning conversation again as a community, and then we need to have it as part of our driving documents that for future councils come in and make decisions based on what our community has advised us to do. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, so we're going to begin with Ms. Kubel. And the question is, community engagement is important. However, how would you balance the voices of a few squeaky wheels with what's good for the whole community, including members of our community who might not feel represented?
My remedy for that is one-on-one conversations, small groups, things like that, to get people together, to know what the facts are, to discuss them, to listen to them, and to make them know that they are being heard. And then take one side and then the other side, showing everything on each side. What is going to happen if we do this? What's going to happen if we do that? And then coming to a compromise, because when you do that, when you keep the communications open, that opens the doors to all the things that can be possible with the help of the public. And that would be my most important thing, is to bring the public in to all the decisions that I would want to take before the council and be your advocate. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Mack?
How do we bring the city together? That's the big question. And we're really not doing a good job. It's through workshops, yes, as Jimmy and some of the council members you see up here would all agree to. We need to involve the community, engage them more. Right now, we're not doing enough in terms of getting the word out to have you participate at these public meetings or workshops. We can do more. We have technology that can do that. I think we should have a city app that we post on that it goes right to your cell phone. It tells you, you know, what the big issues are, and come to the community meeting to discuss about this topic or that topic. But we do have the technology. The problem is we're not getting the word out for the community to be involved, and we need to do that more. Workshops and involve everybody, not just have the same squeaky wheel, if you will, come to meeting after meeting with no one else showing up.
Thank you. Mr. Paulding.
Community workshops. It's one of my favorite topics. In fact, I had a great experience when I was interning with the City of Rio Grande's planning department. There in the in our village, the homes that were being constructed were perceived as too large for the character, the unique character of our village. The phenomenon was known as mansionization. So as my senior project with Cal Poly, City Regional Planning, I did community workshops to find out how we could build consensus on this issue. On one hand, folks were concerned about their property rights. On the other hand, folks were concerned about preserving the historic character of our village. And we ended up, through these workshops and analyzing what other jurisdictions had done to address these potential these issues, we reached consensus, and we were able to amend the village design guidelines and really made a lot of progress in that one very, at that time, contentious issue. And so I'm happy to offer my time as a city council member, if elected, to facilitate those workshops. It's something for the last 10 years I've done in my career as a planner and project manager, and you can get the experts in the room. You can really achieve that consensus when you have that design thinking at various tables, and so it's something I'm happy and interested to do.
Thank you. Mr. Storton?
I think in any situation, you're always going to have the squeaky wheel. You're never going to make everybody completely happy. And so it really becomes the opportunity. I'll go back to what I opened up at the beginning with. It's offering a civil environment, where you build teamwork with others, have combined solutions, and you do that in a way to where you build trust. And relationships are tricky with people, but our lives are all about building relationships. Sometimes it's not even the issue that matters, but it's about allowing people the opportunity to be heard, to explain the circumstances, and work together to build consensus and try to come up with the best solution. When you build those relationships and have that trust, then people at least walk away knowing they've been heard, so you're prepared and ready to tackle whatever the next issue may be. The city does have a website that's very interactive. I get feeds from it all the time, and you can get them too. It tells you when meetings are happening and what's going on. So we're progressive in that way. Maybe we could do better with it, but there are those opportunities out there where we can still share information with our public.
Thank you. Mayor Hill?
We're getting better at sharing information with the public. The proposed development at Fair Oaks and Halcyon is one where this is in a office commercial type zoning where we're proposing residential development where other residents there have been told that they can't use their homes as a residence any longer. And that was done without notifying the public. On the other hand, we've had successes such as the Halcyon Complete Streets plan and the meetings that were held with that. I think it's incumbent on all of us to listen, to make it safe for people to comment and share their views with us as council members and decision makers. Even the squeaky wheel occasionally has something that is very valuable to hear. So we need to make sure that we listen to all voices in the community.
Thank you. Councilwoman Ray?
So I kind of wanted to talk a little bit about what that squeaky wheel is. Everybody's a squeaky wheel on something. And when my wheels squeak, it generally tells me I need new brakes. So when I hear a squeaky wheel, that doesn't necessarily mean that someone isn't worth listening to or that they're a gadfly or anything like that. It just means that they're passionate about something. The question also asked, how do we balance that with individuals that might be afraid to step forward? And some of that is meeting management. And while in our city council chambers, we typically manage our meetings pretty well, and there's a lot of respect and decorum, we do not see that at some of our other entities, including Sanitation District. And we need some leadership over there to make sure that all voices are safe and are heard, and that is absolutely not what's going on in that building. How we step forward with this includes workshops and charrettes and advisory votes, and that's how we get out here and listen from the entire community, not just a couple of voices. So in many cases, we need that each little voice on specific projects. We need the community's voice on big visioning. Thank you.
Well, having worked...
Please.
My turn?
Yes, Ms. Payne. Thank you.
Having worked in the engineering and planning and architectural division for one of the large architectural firms here in San Luis Obispo County and worked on numerous projects over 30 years, so I do have some experience in what's going on with the community. I think in the 4 years that I've been on Planning Commission, there's only been 4 projects that were really discretionary and controversial, and those were the only 4 times that we really had people attend the Planning Commission meetings. So I think to be involved in the community, you need to show up, and it would be so beneficial to us making a decision at Planning Commission if we knew people were out there and what their opinion was at that hearing. If you don't do it, it's not going to happen. And like I said, there was only 4 projects out of 4 years, or almost 4 years, that we even had anybody fall out for those meetings. Maybe we would have the same 2 or 3 people come within conflict, but usually we have 2 or 3 people at a Planning Commission meeting. So, you know, if you're interested in what's going on in the community, you need to get out there and get involved in it. We cannot force you to do that. Thank you.
Thank you. At 7 o'clock, we're going to have one last question. Then at the end of that, everyone's going to have 1 minute to wrap up. Okay. So this is going to be for Mr. Mack. You're going to be starting off on this one. The Briscoe Interchange... So much money has been spent and wasted. Traffic has only gotten worse and more dangerous. What are your plans for this? Believe me, this is better than the one I couldn't read. So.
Gosh. That's a tough one to solve. I mean, we can't resolve it in a minute. But one thing I would propose, because all the solutions that have been brought forth to the city are in excess of what we can afford to do. Tens of millions of dollars, we're going to do it. Just go ahead and go in debt and try and pay it off over years. I think this is one issue we need to take to the voters and put on the ballot. We need to have and hear from the voices of the community of what to do. And before we do that, we need to get a workshop together and put those solutions out and any other creative ideas that we have so that the measure on the ballot is clear.
Thank you. Mr. Paulding.
I see Briscoe as one of those very difficult technical issues that we have. And there have been community workshops. I know there was at least one that was done to try to collect community feedback. But I don't think we achieved consensus. As was mentioned, both alternatives are expensive. But what they really impact are not only the lives of those that have to live with those with either project when the projects are under construction, but they affect the lives of those that live here in the future. And all of these infrastructure decisions are about how are we going to balance the needs of today with the needs of the future. And so, again, a community workshop On that point, I think where those design alternatives are provided to, you know, say there are seven tables in the room. Each table gets an exercise that they work on, talk about the costs and benefits of both of them, and then try to achieve some consensus in that room. I think that that would be a positive way to address that that really difficult local issue.
Thank you. Mr. Storton?
Thank you. Although this is impacting the city of Aurora Grandy, the Briscoe interchange is really a regional problem in the sense that we do have a lot of traffic that comes through here outside the area that impacts that not only for us as residents but our community as a whole. So we're talking of one of the impacts, the first alternative being $14 million roughly and the other one being $23 million, and that's just a staggering amount of money, and we have no way to pay for that at this point in time. And things will be interesting to see how the gas tax goes, because that will be an impact on that type of on those types of developments. But really, this is something that will go to council, and it's something where we as citizens need to come forward and discuss to provide direction to our council, so they know that a workshop would be needed, a few workshops would be needed, and discussions to find out what does it mean for us today, but more importantly, what does it mean for us 20 to 30 years from now, because that'll be a huge impact on the final decision.
Thank you. Mayor Hill.
Full disclosure, the Fair Political Practices Commission, I requested an opinion from them on the Briscoe issue, and they have decided that since I live a little over a half a mile from the project, that I have a presumption of a conflict of interest. So I won't be participating in Briscoe discussion, but I will say this, that I have in the past appeared before the SLOCOG board to help defend the funding for that project at the county and state level, and regardless of which options are selected there. So I would urge that all of us in this room learn about the project. There's plenty of information on it on the city's website. Look at what the options are. Determine what is, in your view, the best solution to the issue, and develop your opinion, and don't be afraid to present it. Make your voice heard. Make sure that we as the leaders listen to you and are respectful of all voices before coming to an opinion.
Thank you. Councilwoman Ray?
I struggle because I kind of wanted to hear what each one of the candidates was feeling like with regard to the two alternatives, and I think the people who are asking the question want to know what way are we leaning towards which alternative. And so I'm going to be just daring and a little bit more specific about at least sharing what my concerns are so that you have an idea when you cast your vote what you're going to be voting for. So the upshot is there's serious flaws in both alternatives, and I want to make sure that you know what I'm looking at. So in the $9 million option one, this is the one where we close one of the off-ramps and do some rehab around the other two. This one is almost, to me, almost a fatal flaw because it requires the closure of a local business, and we just don't do that here. So I have an issue with that one. The $24 million roundabout issue, I have an issue with this one too because it is really an effect on the neighborhood and the places around there. So right now, I feel like both of them have really, really strong flaws, and I don't know what the answer is, but I'm telling you what I'm looking at, and what I'm looking at is that I will not close a local business related to this project, and I won't choose any alternative that is places unfair burden on either our residences or our businesses. And it's up to us to figure out how to make that happen as a community. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Payne.
There has been study sessions on that, so just clarification to those who haven't been on Planning Commission, but we have reviewed that several times. We've looked at the alternatives. They started out with four, and we got it down to two. The people that I've talked to, everybody was pleased when that Briscoe Road one ramp was closed. It decreased the traffic. I don't know how many people here utilize it on a day-to-day basis or are there at any time during the week, but I have three generations of family buried at Halcyon Road. I'm there at least twice a week. I see, and I try to go at different times of the day to see what that traffic impact is. I don't know that it's that severe that we need to spend $23 million. When I asked where we were going to get the money, if Caltrans was going to pay a portion of it, theirs was going to be $6 million. So, but that amount is just way out of our budget. There's no way that we can even accommodate paying for something like that.
Thank you. Ms. Kubel.
I got to look at some of the issues on the Briscoe Road interchange, and the SLOCOG was brought into this and have set aside $6.6 million to go towards this project. So that is sitting out there. So the city needs to make a decision what they're going to do on this whole situation. I'm not sure that the businesses would have to be impacted. You might lose some property, but I'm not sure they'd be closed. And there are two alternatives. And in my view, you can't do anything with the budget that we have because of the costs. So we need to sit down with the community and really get down to brass tacks and do what we can afford, not what they say it might cost or what we want elaborately. Thank you.
Thank you, candidates. So that concludes the question and answer portion. So now we're going to, each of you are going to have 1 minute to wrap things up. And we're going to start with Mr. Storton and work our way back down the table.
Very good. Thank you, everyone, for coming tonight. I do have a table over here with my wife over there passing out stuff, so I'd love to talk to people afterwards if you'd like to hear more. But I have talked to a lot of people over the course of the last 3 months when I decided to run. I've had a lot of meet and greets, I've walked precincts, and I've had a lot of one-on-ones and probably drank more coffee than I probably should have. But it really didn't come down to the issues. I really connected with a lot of people. Certainly we talked about issues, but it really came down to building relationships. And I found three things during most of these conversations. One, people just want to be heard. Two, they want to engage in respectful conversation, and they want us to engage in respectful conversation. And they want reasonable decision makers. I feel like with my platform of civility, teamwork, and producing trust is something that can lead us in that direction. Thank you for my counterparts for coming tonight. I really appreciate the civility that we've experienced here and the chamber for allowing us to come together and meet and just talk, and certainly to the community for displaying their enthusiasm for democracy and really making our community count. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Paulding.
I want to start by thanking everybody for coming out and those that are watching on TV, and thanking the Chamber as well for hosting this event. As we heard tonight, there are a number of challenges that face our community. There are opportunities. I did hope that we would get to discuss Camp Arroyo Grande, its ideal location in our city. There could be a lot there in terms of potential. For example, a conference center that's used to attract clientele, customers that could then shop in our village, things like that. But there are a lot of ideas out there, and I'm sure all of the candidates have them. But what's important is that you make the right decision and elect, qualified, educated folks that want to serve the community. And I think we're all, like I said earlier, our hearts are in the right place. So with me, you'll get somebody that has that willingness to listen to all perspectives, that wants to work with folks to build consensus, and ultimately to treat everything like a project and manage it to completion. So many of our issues that we have just need a little extra focus, and so that's what I'm committed to. I ask for your vote. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Mack, thank you.
Well, with my tool set, what you'll see is I'm a problem solver. I know there's more than one solution to any given problem. I like to get and flush all the information out and provide a multitude of decisions, a multitude of ideas, a multitude of solutions that we can evaluate together and invite the public to be a part of the process. My goal is to get to know all of you and actually get you involved. next councilman said, you know, if you want something done, you got to get involved. You got to get off your seat, quit watching TV, and get involved in the community. And that's what I want to do, and that's what I'm doing. I'm here for you. Please contact me with your concerns and your questions. I'll be happy to answer them. But I'm for transparency. I don't want to hide projects from the public or decisions. I want you to come to the mic, tell me what your concerns are, and you'll be heard. You'll be heard. Also, one thing we didn't talk about was water. I'd like to talk about that more and share solutions that I have regarding solving the water crisis. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Kugel.
Having attended both City Council and South San Luis Obispo County Sanitation District meetings on a regular basis for a couple of years, I understand the serious issues facing our city with regard to the budget cuts and rising costs, including fire protection, traffic congestion, water conservation, and business recruitment. We need responsible development, including simplifying and expediting the review process for not the big developments. I want to clarify that. I will not accept city insurance at your expense like some have, and I will be your city council, council member. I will listen to you and represent your concerns as one of my first priorities. Together, I know that we can make a difference in Arroyo Grande, the city that we all love and call home. Please stand with me. Let me be your voice on the city council, your advocate, and your friend. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Payne.
As I said before, being on Planning Commission for the last 4 years, it's kind of opened your eyes to what's really going on in the community and what needs to take place to bring us back where we don't have this severe deficit budget. And that's just on the financial end of it. But I know being on Planning Commission, we've reviewed ordinance guidelines and specific plans, and we spend a lot of time putting them into effect. But yet when we have a large project come forward, those guidelines are just kind of out the window, and they let the developer dictate what needs to be done. And I think that needs to stop. We've got the guidelines, and they apply to everyone, not the small developer, but the large developer too. So, you know, we've had, since I've been on there, we've had the East Branch design guidelines, Halcyon Road, Bridge Street, and the Briscoe Road. And each one of those contracts that we've hired with subcontractors have cost us a lot of money. And for me, I don't think spending the money on projects that we can't afford to build is good common sense for our finances. I think it could be spent in a better and more appropriate place. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Spain. Councilwoman Ray.
First of all, I want to say that all of our candidates deserve applause, and there's a lot of first-time candidates up here, and being a candidate is really, really hard. And you don't know quite how hard till you try this gauntlet once or twice. So I just want to give everyone up here a hurrah for what you're doing. So, you know, addressing our people in the audience, you really have an important chance important choice to make for mayor. And ultimately what it comes down to is who do you trust? Because we could sit up here for the next 3 hours and answer every question in the basket, and we still wouldn't address everything that's going to come before us so that you can feel 100% sure that you're going to know about every single decision that we're going to make. So really what it comes down to is you have to trust your gut. And we've already gone over, you know, sometimes it helps when you know who is supporting whom, because if you trust someone who's supporting one of us, then that helps inform your decision. And I've already told you who is supporting me. But it's also incumbent upon me to tell you why me and not the current mayor. And really what that comes down to is we've got to have a change at Sanitation District, because the mayor's not effective there anymore, not for lack of trying to do the right thing, but because for whatever reason it's just not working. So for more information or to ask a question of me, please message me on Facebook or catch me here, or you can find me on my website at KarenRay.com. And I want to thank the audience for your interest in coming down here, and even most in for the chamber for having gone through everything to put this on. So thank you so much. And I most importantly want to thank my family, Shirley and Randy, and my kids, Caleb and Aaron, who share me with the community and allow me to follow this passion. So with that, I humbly ask for your vote. Thank you.
Thank you. Mayor Hill.
Thank you. I'm proud of the record that I have in the sanitation district and clearing up the corruption that was there. I'm not afraid to face those issues and take them head on. The good news is that the sanitation district now is on a good footing going forward, and we're able to make progress with our partners such as in Central Coast Blue. Leadership is a team sport. I'm a facilitator, I'm a listener, and I am respectful of you and your opinions, but it's a two-way street. What I need for you to do is to pay attention to what's going on in your city, to use all of the information systems. We have KSBY here, we have the TRIB, the city's website. There's many, many ways that we can become informed, but it's incumbent on each of us to become informed, develop our opinions, and share those. So I'm anxious to work again for the city, and as Karen mentioned, it's not easy to run for office, so I appreciate that we have all of the number of people here that are willing to represent you. So, again, I thank you all for your participation and your interest in the community.
So with that, I'd like to thank the candidates for their candor. We'd like to thank everyone here in the audience for attending and submitting questions. Some of the candidates are going to be available at the at their tables. So if you have any other questions you'd like to ask them, that's a good time to do it. If you'd like to pick up any materials or campaign signs, and if you want to know more about the Chamber of Commerce, our CEO, Jocelyn, is in the back here somewhere, and Sean Shore, and they'll have information for you. Thank you, everyone. Have a good evening. Get home safely.